So we began last week with a part one, which was an overall overview, I should say, of halachos, hashkafos, values, of how we should relate to non-religious Jews, what obligations we should feel towards them, a sense of caring and concern, this idea that I'll do me, you do you, you know, has a place in polite society, but a much more limited role from a Jewish perspective. From a Jewish perspective, we are supposed to care. Now, how you demonstrate that care, what is appropriate, what is rude, what is sanctimonious, what is patronizing, what's actually going to be effective. So the devil can certainly be in those details for sure. But on a fundamental level, we saw numerous. I think I told you that I have a sefer at home that listed 16 different possible mitzvos. I think a little bit of them are a stretch. Some of them are quite tenuous. But certainly we saw many, many very central values of Ahavas Hashem and of Yahatharecha Kamocha and all sorts of other things, Avas Yisrael, and other things that really seem to indicate that we have to care and concern and be actively involved in helping whenever we can and to whatever extent we can. And not all of us are going to have the equal access or equal ability to show our concern, care, and even halavai, inspire our fellow Jews. So that was kind of an overview in a broad sense. I wanted to zoom in on, there are, you know, myriads and myriads of shilas, sometimes quite complicated even, that involve interacting with non-religious Jews. It could be friends, it could be coworkers, it could be relatives. Things come up all the time. One of the most common and potentially even sensitive issues that can come up is the topic which I wanted to dedicate a specific shir on, and that is the question of invitations. Invitations for Shabbos meals and for holiday meals. This comes up a lot for the Pesach Seder. Time of family, people get together, and in some cases in the nuclear family, you could have a child who's not as religious as the rest of the family, and certainly in the broader family, people, you know, there's very, very few families that I know in which everyone is more or less the same level of religiosity. That is a rare, it exists, everything exists, but it's rare. And if you have a loving and close family, sometimes people will invite all sorts of people to the Seder, and sometimes people want to invite coworkers to the Seder, and neighbors to the Seder, all sorts of things. But it doesn't relate to the Seder exclusively. This could happen on a regular Shabbos. I'll tell you, I was first introduced to this as an actual topic, you know, that I felt some level of responsibility for when I was involved in NCSY, or kind of youth groups and outreach. But you have a Shabbaton, specifically targeting kids from public school or not religious backgrounds. So you're inviting them, they're going to come, they're going to drive, you know, maybe they sleep, you know. How is that allowed? Is that allowed? And I remember speaking to one of my rabbis, Rabbi Rosenzweig, about this, who is a master of everything, but he doesn't have so much experience in this. And I remember his first instinct is, well, why don't you just invite them over on Tuesday? And just hang out with them, you know, being with them and showing that you care. Like, and I remember having to explain to him that there's something unique and magical about a Shabbos meal. A Shabbos experience. I don't even mean the 24 hours of Shabbos. That's all. But even just a Shabbos meal is not the same thing as a Sunday dinner. And once I explained it, like, he didn't contest it. But I remember, you know, it wasn't obvious to someone who had not experienced it, I guess you could say. But be that as it may, given the fact that most of us understand that on a practical level, it's sometimes the only time we can have company. And second of all, just on a actual impact level, it's going to be much more likely to be effective if the goal is to try to inspire and share the beauty of Yiddishkeit. So this comes up as a real, real question. And it should, I don't know if it'll be a surprise to you or not, but it's actually a huge machloket, whether that's even allowed or not, what the parameters are. And I think this is something very, very important for all of us to be aware of, and I think it's a really, really interesting topic. So with that further ado, let's jump in. So the basis of the entire shir is source number one. It's a Gemara, and it's a somewhat well-known Gemara and a somewhat well-known halacha. And let's see what it says. You probably are familiar with the terms, even if not the actual information or the having seen it inside. Perhaps you have, maybe you have not. And the Gemara here says as follows. These are two random examples. It could be anything. But the examples that the Gemara gives, somewhat far-fetched in our day and age, but still, are, let's say, for example, you know, a nazir, some person can take a vow, they're not going to have any wine. Or, for example, and this will be relevant as we continue, let's say it's a non-Jew even who's asking you, but he's asking you to help him do something that violates one of the seven Noahide laws, one of which is you can't eat torn limb from a living animal. Not the kind of thing that sounds so appealing to us, but apparently in the pagan world, in the ancient world, this was something that used to be done. So in either case, you have somebody who's asking us to help them violate a prohibition. So the Nazir can't drink wine. He says to you, can you please pass the rosé? Or the non-Jew asks, you know, here, can you please pass that, you know, torn leg off that, you know, cow or whatever? Are you allowed to do that? Now, you might think, as I say, you do you, I do me. I'm not making you sin, and it's not my business. You do what you want. But the Gemara says, no, that's actually a prohibition, a Torah prohibition, to help and assist that person do the sin that they are, you know, as we, what's the term that we use now in our world? They're consenting. They want to do it. There's no, they have agency. And yet all they want is a little help. Pass the wine. Says the Gemara, it's a Torah prohibition. Tamad lomar, v'lifnei iver, lo sitein mechshol. Now that is a very, very famous phrase. And literally it means don't put a stumbling block before the blind person. So okay, that's also mean. That'd be very cruel. Right? But the Gemara here understands this, and in other places, that it's also intended to be figurative, not just literal. And it's not just literally putting a stumbling block before the blind, but as the Rambam interprets it, sometimes we all become blind with lust. We're blinded by our desire. So in this case, the Nazir, for example, is blinded by his desire for alcohol. But if, when we think of it, someone who's addicted, an alcoholic, for example, right? If you could somehow, you know, free them of the shackles of the addiction, of the desire in the moment, etc., right? They know it's bad for them. They know they shouldn't do it. But right now, they can't see it. They can't feel it. They're blinded. They're blinded by that. So says the Rambam, interpreting the Gemara, that's what the Gemara means. Sometimes people are so blinded by what their desires, they want to do something that's going to hurt them, just like a blind person walking to the stumbling block. So says the Gemara, if you will help them when they can't help themselves, do something that is bad for them, that itself is a prohibition. So ask the Gemara, come on, just because I pass the wine, something that he or she could do themselves? So they're lazy, it's at the other end of the table. Could get up and get the wine. They ask me to come, that's going to be a Torah prohibition, all I did is pass the wine? So the Gemara answers, and this is very well known and very important for the continuation of our shir, on the second line, Hachav my askin, and you know, you're right, we have to just clarify a bit, what are we talking about? Dekai betray avrei nara. Again, using the parable or the original case, the Gemara says, imagine the scenario, not where you're both sitting at the same table, where you're both sitting at the same bar stools, and you can just pass the wine, but imagine something different. Imagine you're on one side of the river, and you have the wine. The Nazir's on the other side of the river, and he don't got a boat. So the only way he can get the wine is if you give it to him, or her. So there, that's the prohibition. Because I'm not just helping, I'm enabling. They can't do the Aver without me. That is the upshot, and that's this is the halacha, who's asking this way. If you help, or let me rephrase that. If you enable someone to do an Avera, which they would not otherwise really be able to do on their own. We don't mean forever. I mean, eventually the guy can get his own boat. But right now, the person can't do the Avera. And my assistance was crucial. Not incidental, but crucial. Without me, they couldn't do the Avera right now. And I helped. It doesn't take him off the hook. They also got, of course they did an Avera. But so did I. What's my Avera? I put a stumbling block, so to speak, before the blind. And this is a Torah prohibition. This is very severe. In light of this, perhaps surprising to most, given that we're all familiar with all sorts of people coming to our Shabbos tables, etc., but you should know, Rav Moshe Feinstein holds, all of those invitations are totally usher. After all, they're only coming to my house because I invited them. In essence, I am really encouraging, if not worse, they're driving. Let's take a look. Source number two. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, I don't recognize the name of the rabbi, but I know he's from Detroit. Says here. Naftali Karlbach, maybe related. I'm sure they're all Karlbachs are all related. I don't know how he's related to the famous Karlbach, but I'm sure he is. And he was a rabbi in Detroit. And he asked Rav Moshe Feinstein many, many, many decades ago this question. Would it be a violation of the Iver lahazmin anashim sheyavo litpalel b'Shabbos beis haKnesses, sheyodei sheyichalu haShabbos b'nesiyah b'mashines. So this original version of this question is a slight variation, but it's really the same question. Can I have an outreach minion? Can I have a Kirov program, right? For those who are from New York, NJOP at Lincoln Square Synagogue, very famous for decades. Now you have on the Upper West Side also, MJE, and this is NTSY, and you want to invite somebody to the Shabbaton, you want to invite them to come for Shabbos. Invite them to daven at the shul, come to the Kiddush. But you know they're going to drive. Rabbi in Detroit asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, would that be allowed or not? So Rav Moshe writes, where it's underlined, Vehishavti, Del hazminas harechokim ba'ofen she'efshar she'evo below chilo Shabbos. And this is the key point. They live far away. They're going to drive. Right? It's one of the major differences between Orthodox and non-Orthodox Jews. Do you have to live in walking distance to a shul? So they, you know, why would you overpay for a smaller house when you could live further away? The answer is we do it because we have no choice. But if, you know, so unless it's a coincidence, okay, if you have a random non-religious person who could walk 2 minutes to the shul is one thing. But the average person you're inviting, you're casting a wide net, people are going to be driving to the shul, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's obviously prohibited. Vadayasar. Wow. Now, let's skip the next part for a second. We'll come back to that. But if you continue on a little bit lower, he points out, Isser lifneiver, yesh af be'enem rechokim kolkach. And then he says, what about the people who don't live so far? If you know, kishi yadua, shit atlu leilech beraglayim, right? If you know they're going to be lazy and going to walk anywhere, and not going to walk, the Yisuba machines, they're going to drive in their car, it would still be us, right? Just think about it for a moment, right? Where we live, right? Some people walk to the Merkaz, some people still drive, right? And where I used to live, I was even closer to the Merkaz. So there, the only reason I wouldn't drive is not because I'm not lazy, because I'm very lazy. It's just because sometimes the parking's too hard. Right? So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's the same thing. The fact that someone could walk to the shul, but if you know they're going to drive, yeah, they could walk 15 minutes or drive too. It doesn't just mean they live an hour away, 30 minutes away. If you know they're going to drive, and they're driving because you invited them, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, he thinks it is usher. Wow. Even though you're doing it for wonderful reasons. Now, at the bottom, he adds one caveat, which was, again, unique to this situation of a Kirov rabbi or beginner's program, which is, what if you didn't invite the person? You just put an ad in the Jewish newspaper. Or nowadays, you know, you put up an ad on Facebook or Instagram or something like that. So there he says he's not 100% sure if that's usher, because there you didn't invite anyone. You just let people know there's a minion and they're choosing to come. He says that he's not sure about. But to actually invite somebody, so again, since right now we're not talking about beginner's programming, we're talking about invitations. So most person is not just saying, you know, halach ma'anya, or, you know, and just hanging up a sign or putting up a petek. Anyone who wants to come to my house, Pesach Seder's open. Anyone who wants to come for Friday night dinner, right, you're calling up your aunt, your cousin, your brother, or your child, or your coworker, and saying, hey, come for Seder, come for Shabbos dinner. But you know they're going to drive. Let me just clarify. Maisim b'chol yom, right? Don't people do this all the time? So the Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's usher. He has no defense for it. He thinks it's a violation. Now, how could one, what do you think, how could you argue on this Rav Moshe? Right? Rav Moshe said it. And we have to be cognizant, you know, he was Rav Moshe Feinstein. But
how else would you introduce somebody to...
Okay, so one argument my mother-in-law is saying is, we're trapped. You know, if we want to expose people. So the question would be, and we're going to get to this later in the shiur, Mom, do you look at, you're saying, in essence, if I could reframe what you're saying, let's look at a big picture. And the greater good is accomplished. And there's no way to get to that greater good. You're making that argument, so we're going to get to that. But let's try to be even more local. On Rav Moshe's point, that this is a violation, again, remember what we saw in the first source. To violate Lifnei Iver, it has to be that they're only sinning because of me. So, even better than my mother-in-law, her daughter. I just said her daughter. And this is an argument that others have made against Rav Moshe Feinstein. Numerous, including, for example, in a more recent tshuva, Rav Asher Weiss. So I don't understand what Rav Moshe Feinstein is talking about. You really think these people are sitting at home all day? Either they're going to drive to my house for the meal, or they're driving to the movie theater for a Friday night. Either they're driving to my house for Shabbos lunch, or they're driving to the golf course, or the country club, or to the mall. They're going to drive. just a question of where they drive. And therefore, I'm not really, is that really, again, remember, the model we have to look for is the two sides of the river. Right? The two sides of the river, he couldn't sin without me. Without my giving the wine, they can't sin. Is that really comparable to inviting someone for a Shabbos?
They're going to sin anyway.
Huh?
They're going to sin anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You said the same thing as my mother-in-law's daughter.
If you're going to be in shul, why don't you come back and join us for a Shabbos lunch and spend the afternoon with us?
But when you, yeah, but that's probably a little bit different because you were probably inviting them to walk home with you, right?
Yeah, they were going to be in shul. I knew that they were going to drive to shul.
Right.
But they didn't come every week. But what I used to
I hear, okay. So I'm not sure. If you would have asked Ramosha Feinstein, it's not as black and white as Ramosha's case, but he might have still said, you're a sinner. I don't know. But Rav Asher Weiss would for sure defend you. So it's not clear.
But it stopped them driving after because it was spent the afternoon.
They spent the whole, oh, even better, noch besser.
It's really nice.
Yeah, wow, amazing.
So it was...
We had a very close friend. I mean, when I say had, thank God, everyone's older, but they're also alive. My parents have friends that 20 plus years ago, when they both lived in a completely different city than they live now, the husband got religious, you know, in his middle age. 40s, probably, maybe the early 50s, that's when he got religious. But they were living in a completely non-from area, and his wife, you know, was already, this, you know, she didn't sign up for that. He had already had teenage, college-age children. You know, you found God, not us. Like, so he was a little bit, wonderful people. And basically, I'm not saying this was right of him, but he decided he wants to be totally Shomer Shabbos, but he can't live without shul. So he was his own rabbi, as we often all are. And he poskens for himself, he's going to drive to and from shul. But other than that, he wouldn't have machal Shabbos. He wouldn't use his phone, he wouldn't turn on the TV. But he did. So that was his decision. But whenever he was in shul, if not whenever, I'm sure it wasn't every week, but people like my parents, and often my parents, mm-hmm. would invite him over. And it was a very similar thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that he would stay all day. Don't know that my father would have given up his Shabbos nap at that point in his life.
I don't think your parents would, because she said, what would she have done? She'd go home and she'd sit and watch television and be on her own.
Right.
So
good. You did a lot of mitzvos in there. But
experience for her, so she wouldn't.
And yet, again, it's. I'm not saying he's right. I'm just sharing with you. Rav Moshe Feinstein is really strict on this. And he really thinks that anytime you are inviting them, it is a serious avera. But as I say, it's not convincing that he's right. And I think most postmen would reject Rav Moshe Feinstein here. Because, after all, as all of you intuitively are saying, the person is going to drive anyway, so I'm not really causing them to sin. So how is that with Lifnei Iver? Now, let's assume that not you or I or anyone in this room, but some of the other really big rabbis with broad shoulders are disagreeing, rejecting Rav Moshe Feinstein's stringency. But is that really all there is? And the answer is no, we still may be, we're not out of the woods just yet. Because this brings us to source number 3. Until now, we've been assuming that it's all or nothing. If it's on two sides of the river, in other words, the person can't sin without me, it's a big, big avera. But if they could, just as either, we're both sitting at the Shabbos table, and the Nazir says, pass the wine. And if you say, no, I'm not passing you the wine, they're just going to get up and get it. It's not really enabling them. They could do it anyway. So what do we see? Until now, what have we been assuming? It's permitted. Right? It's either usur or it's not. We haven't seen anything in between. Comes along Tosfos and other Rishonim in source number 3 and says, sorry, as often the rabbis do, even where there's a little bit of a gap, a little bit of a lacuna, and it seems like it's either usur or mutter, come along the rabbis and say, well, it's not really mutter. It's rabbinically prohibited. It says Tosfos number 3, Mikomakom Isser Derabanan Miha Ika Shechayev Lafrishom Isser. Says Tosfos, you're right. Lifnei Iver, capital L, capital, right? Neon letters, bright lights. That real one of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, that is only violated if you enable them. If they couldn't do it without you. But even if they could have done it without you, and therefore, we can't say you're enabling them, because they can do it without you. But you're assisting them. You pass the wine. That's a rabbinic prohibition, which he refers to as misayeya lo revera, in the negative way. You're helping. You're assisting. a Jew cannot be party to someone else's sin. This really relates to some of the things we spoke about last week. We're supposed to be helping people be close to Hashem, not far. Now, you can't say I pushed them over the cliff. I didn't enable them. They're going to do it anyway. But I helped. That's a rabbinic prohibition. Sometimes referred to as Messiah, sometimes referred to as the Chi of Lahafrisho, as he puts it here. But it's a rabbinic prohibition. Now, of course, once you're talking about a rabbinic prohibition, it's not nearly as severe as what we started with. It's not a Torah prohibition. But I hate to break it to you. We care about rabbinic laws too. Right? We just had a whole holiday called Purim. That's rabbinic law. We all take that pretty seriously, don't we? We all heard the Megillah. We didn't talk. Listened to every word. So we take rabbinic halachas also quite seriously. So even if we don't go as far as Rav Moshe Feinstein and say it's a Torah prohibition to invite them, NCSY is Asur Midaraisa. Shouldn't there be a rabbinic prohibition of Misayaya? And many have argued that that would be a real problem. We don't have to go so far as Rav Moshe Feinstein, but it's still going to be Asur. So how do we get out of that? So the truth is that it really is more complicated. How so? Because it's not clear that this rabbinic prohibition applies in all scenarios and in all cases. So, for example, something you don't have on your sheet, one of the poskim, the Noda B'Yehuda, the famous Rav of Prague, see, he says that this rabbinic prohibition only applies if you help the person while they're sinning. In the moment that they're sinning, they needed help and you help them. But if you help them somehow before the sin, that's not a rabbinic prohibition. If it would have been lefneiver, if it's two sides of the river, so then of course it's prohibited even before. But once we're not talking about two sides of the river, you're not enabling them. You're at the bar. You're at the Shabbos table. You can help them. So what your role was when? Not when they sinned, but before. Maybe you pass the wine and they sit and sniff it and stir it and smell it and do all the other things and they don't even drink it for 5 minutes. Or even if it's 30 seconds. But when they're actually sinning, you weren't doing anything. You helped them before. So says the Noda B'Yehuda that there is no rabbinic prohibition. Now, if the Noda B'Yehuda is right, that would solve our problem. Because when are you inviting them? If we're talking especially about, you're not inviting them, I guess in theory, if you walked over to them while they were driving and you said, hey, drive to my house, maybe that would be a violation according to him. But if you call them up on Tuesday, say, want to come for Shabbos? You invite the kids on a Shabbaton and you don't just put an ad on the internet. You actually call them up. Hey, we're having a Shabbaton. Come to shul on Friday night. That's on Tuesday. That's not at the same time. The sin will take place when? On Shabbos. So technically speaking, that might not be a violation. But there's another even more fundamental issue, which is this idea, right? Everything we're talking about today, which really connects to what we talked about last week, has to do with the fact that we have to care about this fellow Jew, right? We don't just say, you do you, I'll do me. And the fact that if I'm going to help them sin, that's bad because I have to care. And here we're saying, even if I'm not enabling them, but I'm just even contributing a little bit, I'm supposed to care, right? Who do I have to care about? Every Jew? Every person? Again, here, again, I think this is not really complicated, but this is a little bit nuanced. You have to, again, there's two levels in our mind here. There's the Torah prohibition, which is obviously much more severe if we violate it, but it's going to be much more limited. It only applies if you're two sides of the river, if you're enabling them. But now we're on the lower level of Eira. So who do we have to care about? Who is it that I'm not allowed to help? Allowed to enable, I should say. So if you go back to the way we started, it seems very universal, right? People are often insecure or feel a little bit attacked after all the Jews think they're better than everybody and we're not, we're particularistic, we only care about our own, and Orthodox only care about Orthodox. Lifnei'iver is the exact opposite of that accusation, right? How do I know this? Because the Gemara went out of its way to give two examples. And what was the second example? You can't even help a non-Jew sin. So if you really are enabling someone to sin, that's a very severe avera, and it applies across the board. Religious, not religious, Jewish, even not Jewish, you can't help somebody sin. But what about the rabbinic prohibition? One side of the river. We're both at the Shabbos table, it's just a question of passing the wine. Or to use our case, they're going to drive anyway. Does that apply to anybody? So the source number four is the Shach. The Shach was one of the most famous commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, and he has a tremendous chiddush. he says that we have a fundamental distinction. Whereas the Torah prohibition, lifnei iver, applies to Jew and non-Jew, and certainly to religious and non-religious Jews, you can't enable anyone to sin. If we're now on the lower level, it's only the rabbinic issue. I'm assisting. So he says in that case, that only applies to a religious Jew. A religious Jew, what do you mean? He's sinning. Welcome to the real world, ladies and gentlemen. Real people sin, even if they're religious. So you have a friend, you have a neighbor, you have a child, you have a relative who is basically committed, but at the moment they're having a moment of weakness and they want to sin and they ask you to help. So that, says the Shach, that was the Chiddush. Yes, it's a rabbinic prohibition to help. Even though they can sin without you, but you're helping. Don't help. Don't contribute. They do it on their own, that's very sad. But we can't help even a little bit. But what if the person we're talking about isn't even religious, let alone Jewish? So says the Shach there, in Hachanami, if you were enabling, it would be lifneiver. Lifneiver applies even to a non-Jew, certainly to a religious, to a non-religious Jew. But you're not enabling. The person can drive anyway. You're just helping. The prohibition, which is much lower level of helping someone sin, assisting, only applies to another religious Jew. You care. Right now you're having a weakness, but we know you basically care, so we have to care for you. But in a case of someone who's not religious, or certainly not Jewish, says the Shach, it wouldn't apply. It wouldn't apply. And therefore, Rav Asher Weiss and others, suggest that perhaps we're okay on this front as well. Because even though you have to admit that even if I'm not enabling the person to drive, because they're going to drive anyway, but by me telling them, hey, drive to my house or drive to my shul, I am contributing somewhat to their driving. I'm not uninvolved, I can't deny that. Yes, but there we're talking about already a much lower level. It's only rabbinic. And the people who we're talking about, maybe not their fault, maybe they're second generation reformed, third generation assimilated, who knows? But they don't know anything. They don't know any better. And therefore, they're sinners. Again, we're not looking to judge them, but we have no choice in this case. And therefore, it could be that there's no prohibition whatsoever. So this is a little bit of a 10-minute complicated discussion, perhaps. But it was important to have, because this is one of the issues that really does occupy the minds of the poskim. And just to kind of give an interim summary, because I want to now move to the last part of the shiur, or the second part of the shiur, which is we're going to expand the discussion in the direction that my mother-in-law mentioned earlier. But before we get to that, just to again summarize where we are. We saw from the first source that there is a Torah prohibition that we can't enable someone to sin. And it's arguable, or Moshe Feinstein argued it, it's arguable that if you invite someone to drive to come to your Shabbaton or your Pesach Seder or your Shabbos meal, you're enabling them to sin. A Torah prohibition for you. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion. But we saw that many poskim say, well, since they're going to drive anyway, that's not the case. But then we said, well, there's going to be a second problem, a related problem, 1B, which is, yeah, but okay, you're not enabling them, they'll drive anyway, but you are contributing. You know, you are telling them to drive to your house, to drive to your shul. Maybe that should be a rabbinic prohibition. And here also we saw two possible reasons why the rabbinic prohibition might not be violated. Either because maybe the rabbinic prohibition only exists if it is simultaneous with the sin. And here your contribution is, your invitation is before they're driving, not when they're driving. Maybe even before Shabbos, not on Shabbos. You invited them, you called them up, right? Sometimes we, you know, those last minute invitations. Well, a last minute invitation is Thursday night. It's not on Shabbos morning. Right? You have to be really close friends with someone to invite them on Shabbos morning for a meal, right? And usually not going to be, if you would do that, maybe that would be a problem. But that's not what we're talking about, you know, to be realistic about it. And then we saw the last thing, the Shach, who said, the whole rabbinic prohibition of you can't contribute anyway doesn't apply to non-religious Jews. And that's what we're talking about. So it seems to me, again, it's very important to be aware of this. Rav Moshe Feinstein does say these things are usher. But many other poskim are more lenient than Rav Moshe, and it seems to me at least that there's more compelling evidence on the side of those who are more lenient. But now this brings us to our big pivot, which is the question of the big picture. Right? My mother-in-law phrased it as, how else are we going to be, you know, have a Kiruv movement? How else are we going to... Now, one argument could be, well, we'll have a Kiruv movement on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But again, anyone who's been in the business knows very hard without Shabbos. Right? Shabbos is magical. Shabbos is special. We don't always appreciate it because we live with it. But for someone who doesn't live with it, Shabbos is really incredible. So, is that relevant or not? Until now, we've been discussing very, you know, kind of like an accountant in real details. Let's zoom out and see this bigger picture. And the first one to make the argument that we have to really take this into account, very famously, is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach on source number 6. This is a very, very famous tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And he discusses not Shabbos, but something even more subtle, perhaps. Can you offer someone food if you know they're not going to make a bracha? They're not going to wash. Not going to bench. Now, in source number 5, the Shulchan Aruch says that's usher. Usher litein lo prusas pas elam ken yodea boshi natal yadav. You can't get someone to bread if you're not going to wash. Or lo yitein lechol elam ish yodea yavarech. Is it lifnei iver? Is it the durabonon? It's something. You're not supposed to be helping people sin. We were talking about Shabbos, right? But there's 612 other mitzvahs. Shabbos is not the only mitzvah. You can't help someone sin anyway. So if you know someone's not going to make a bracha, says the Shulchan Aruch, letter of the law, you can't give them anything to eat. So Shlomo Zalman, in light of that, asks, what if you have someone in your house who's not religious? So his particular shaila he discusses, you have someone in your house who's not religious, but you know that as of now, they have a parv to positive attitude towards religion. In the specific case he describes, and this was, we know, throughout the Jewish world, this has been true for decades. I think it's at risk for the future generations, but right now it's been true for decades. How many of the Jewish institutions that we have been built by contributions of non-religious people? Right? You can't even count. It's sad that their children and grandchildren are becoming so assimilated that it's becoming less common than it used to be. But when I was growing up, every building, the people's names on it, you know, half of them or more. I grew up, the president of my shul was drove on Shabbos. It was a different world then. But the bottom line is, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, let's say you have somebody who's not anti-anything. In fact, they contribute towards Torah. And now they're in your house. You're not going to give them something to eat? They're going to be very insulted. And he says, and even and certain people, you say, okay, but ask them to make a bracha. Ask them to put on a yarmulke. Okay, maybe some people, you could do that. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is realistic to know that some people, that itself will insult them. So what do? If I keep the letter of the law on the Shulchan Aruch, I can't offer them anything to eat, anything to drink, they'll be very insulted, they're going to understand why, and that's it. You're going to turn them off from Torah, turn them off from religion. On the other hand, if you give it to them, you're going to be facilitating. And there, they're in your house, for example. You give something to eat, they literally can't eat. So you're really enabling them. People seem to be lifting Eivor D'Oraisa. You don't offer them that piece of cake, they got nothing to eat right now. And you're going to offer them the cake even though they're not going to worry, they're not going to make a bracha? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, source number 6, it's permitted. It's permitted. Take a look, we'll read only a little bit of it inside. Source number 6. At the end of the line, where you see where it's underlined, at the end of the line, he says, wait, after he talks about how the person will be insulted and embarrassed if you don't offer them the food, Yitachein shebeglal ha-davar hazeh, and it's not just that they're going to be insulted on a personal level. It could be that their opinions and feelings towards Torah and towards Yiddishkeit and towards Orthodoxy will be damaged. And they'll have anger and hatred towards people who are religious. In this case, the right thing to do is to give them the food. And not to worry about lifnei iver and other things. Why? Because even though, yes, right now they're not going to make a bracha, that's a very small aveira, and a small damage compared to the much larger damage you'll be causing by not feeding them. And if you go towards the bottom, he says, where is it? Yeah, on the bottom, he basically gives us an analogy. He says, Harizadoma, Lemisha Koteya Etzba Miraglo, Shachavera Bechte Latzilo, so Bekach Mikties Kalyad Shalo. Basically, this is like an amputation. You're the doctor, and you have to cut off a person's arm or hand or whatever to save their life. Would the person be upset at you? Would they think that you're doing, you know, you're harming them? No, you're saving them. No one's minimizing losing a limb, God forbid. But compared to losing your life, it's a good deal. So too says Rosh Hashanah and Orbach. Yes, you're helping them sin. You're helping them have food without a bracha. But you're saving their life in the sense that they still now have, they still like the rabbi, or they still like the religious cousin or the religious friend, and they're still going to have warm feelings towards orthodoxy. And you know, the shul they don't go to will be the Orthodox shul, and when they do go X times a year, it'll be the Orthodox shul. That is that's much more important than whether they made the bracha on the kichel or not. And in essence, says Rosh Hashanah Rabach, we can look at the big picture. Now, this you have to understand. This is not a simple psak. You might even say it's radical. Right, that's not usually the way we think in Orthodoxy. Right, we don't, this was exactly the argument and obviously I don't really think this is true, but superficially, this was the same argument that the conservative movement made when they said you could drive on Shabbos. People are moving to the suburbs. If we tell them they can't drive on Shabbos, which had been the position even of conservative Judaism, well, then they'll just stop coming to shul, and then they'll be really gone. So better to let them do this one thing, so at least we can keep them connected. And then, and that's a very slippery slope. And we saw that they slipped all the way down, unfortunately. Generations later, that did not work out for them. So you don't usually say that we look at the big picture to mock or something. And yet, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thinks that Lifnei Iver is different. And this is really the key. Because Lifnei Iver is all about helping people be close. Don't help someone sin. Well, in this case, the definition of help has to be understood, says Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach, in a more nuanced way. Right? Again, you can imagine this in a health situation, right? Let's say, for example, you had an elder parent or a relative that you were, responsible in helping. And let's say they had, some kind of diabetes and they asked you for a cookie or something like that. Now, you know they're not supposed to be cookies. And by you giving them the cookie, you're helping them do something unhealthy. Or you have a relative who smokes or a relative who drinks too much. And they ask you for one cigarette or one drink. So in the moment, that's a terrible thing. And if you care about them, you wouldn't want to give it to them. And therefore, maybe you shouldn't. But let's say there's a scenario, which I think is very realistic. There could be such scenarios. In which if you would say, okay, I'm not giving you the food. I'm not giving you the drink. Now they're going to be so upset at you, they're not listening to you ever. And you have 10 other things you're responsible to help them for. If you're out of their life, if they don't trust you, who's taking them to the doctor? Who's doing 100 other things that they need to do? So you're going to win the battle, but you're going to lose the war. Sometimes you have to say, you know what, for this little cookie, it's not good for them. Even the one cigarette's not good for them. But overall, for their health, I got to stay in their life. I got to be the one who helps them. They have to trust me and know that I care for them and that I overall help them. So Sefer Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is the same thing here. Right now, I'm giving them something that's not good for them. I'm giving them a cookie they're not going to make a bracha on. But if I keep their more positive and warm relationship to Yiddishkeit in general, towards me as an Orthodox Jew, that's much better for their long-term spiritual health than the momentary small sin. That is Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's main chiddush. And in fact, this is echoed, and as we shall see, it goes even further in source number 7. Source number 7 is Rav Moshe Sternbach. We've quoted him over the years in our series in the past. Moshe Sternbach was originally, I think he's born in England, if I'm not mistaken. He certainly grew up in England. Went to the famous Schneider's Yeshiva in London, and then at some point was in South Africa, and now for many, many, many decades has been in Yerushalayim. He's 90-something years old at the moment, but still going strong. The head of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim, a big, big Talmud Chacham. So if I'm not mistaken, this was from his South African days. So South Africa has a lot of Bali Tshuva, a very close-knit community. And he was asked then, look at the Shaila, source number 7. Ben Baal Tshuva. Right? There was an adult person who had become a Baal Tshuva who asked about his parents. Mazmin horav l'sudas l'al Shabbos yudei sheyachzor l'beitam b'machonit. This religious Baal Tshuva son, he's 20s, he's 30 years old, he wants to invite his non-religious parents for Friday night dinner, and they're going to drive. Is he allowed to invite them or not? That's the Shaila. I think this happened in South Africa, but it could have happened in 100 other cities. And he writes in the beginning that the son says to him, "Bederech zuhu makayev harav liyadut." And we've seen it again. Life's not a fairy tale. And I know many stories of Baalei Tshuva whose parents never warmed up to the idea. Maybe the relationships were even strained because their child became Orthodox. Those exist. But I also know many other stories where the parents themselves became more identified and more positive towards Yiddishkeit because a child became religious. And I definitely know cases, they absolutely exist, where the parents became completely religious. I mean, we have somebody in our community who, someone converted, and because of the child converting, the parents converted. Not just Bali Tshuva, they became Jewish because of the child. But certainly, a Baal Tshuva, especially there are families where one child became a Baal Tshuva, then that's inspired the younger sibling to become a Baal Tshuva, and then when they got the two or three kids, then the parent, these things absolutely do happen. I don't know what the statistics are, but they do happen. So this boy, again, when I say boy, he might have been 40 years old, I don't know how old he was, but he's telling Rav Sternbach, if I invite my parents, each time, oh, that's such a beautiful thing, they see the Shabbos table, they see the Zmiros, they see me with the grandkids, it's bringing them closer to Yiddishkeit. Am I allowed to invite them or not? I know they're going to drive. And let's just really sharpen the case. I don't know if this is exactly the situation, but it might be. Let's say you have an older couple, and you know the definition of older is older than however you are at the moment. So for the purposes of this scenario, they're in their 60s, since I am not. That already makes somebody older. So let's say they were planning on having on a typical Friday night, if I don't invite them over, I didn't say old, I said older. It's a very important difference between old and older. Never say anyone's old, but older. Okay, so let's say this older couple, on a typical Friday night, if their child doesn't invite them over for dinner, what are they going to do? Stay in the living room. Maybe they'll watch old television, they'll read some books. They're not driving anywhere. It's not true they're going to the mall. They're not going to the mall on Friday night. They're not going to the movies on Friday night. They're not going to the country club on Friday night. So this boy invites this young man invites his parents over for Shabbos, for dinner. They're only driving because of him. Is that allowed or not? Now, until now, we thought it should be obviously also, right? No? Says Rav Sternbach. He thinks it's permitted. Wow. Why? So he says there in the middle of the source number 7. Nirishi yisod ha'isr delifne iver, hudumya di iver shemach shilo. Avlim kavana so rak the tova asatzmo lo nikra machshil, elkom sharofe minatech lo nikra maka chavero, kach gam. Even though his kavana is not to hurt, but rather to help. It is not machshilo, but matzilo. In other words, what's Rav Sternbach saying here? Very similar, if not identical, to what Shlomo Zalman Rabach said before. Lifnei iver is a unique kind of aveira, a new kind of halacha. The whole halacha was, again, to take the literal example, don't put a stumbling block before a blind person. Why? Because in 99.99% of the cases, if you were to do that, you put the banana peel before the blind person, that's bad for the blind person. You're going to embarrass them. They might physically even get hurt if they trip. So everyone's going to laugh at them, etc. But let's say there was some hypothetical scenario. I don't know what it is. But some hypothetical scenario in which putting the banana peel on the ground was actually better for the blind person. You were helping them somehow. Says Sternbach, he thinks clearly that would be permitted. That's not a nichshol, a michshol. That's not a stumbling block. That's a hatsala. Just like in most cases, cutting someone's hand off would be a bad thing. But there's that 0.1% of the cases where it's actually saving their life. We don't look at them as the same thing, right? You'd have to be incredibly unsophisticated to see those as the same. One was an act of, attack, destruction, and one was life-saving. So says Sternbach here also, that's the nature of lifnei iver. This prohibition, again, usually we don't get so philosophical when we apply halacha. But like Shlomo Zalman before him, says Sternbach, when it comes to lifnei iver, we have to look at the big picture. Because the whole nature of this mitzvah is bring people closer or at the least don't distance them. Here, if this child never invites his parents over, in essence, they'll be distancing them. And certainly in the flip side, if you invite them over and have beautiful Shabbos meals and you show them the beauty of Yiddishkeit, something that might not be their fault. They weren't raised religious either, the parents. Luckily, the child stumbled on some Jewish kids in public school and they brought him to a youth group and a synagogue and a bar mitzvah thing, and the rabbi was really sweet, and thank God he became religious. And he wants to share that beauty with his parents, with the grandparents. So Rav Sternbach, he thinks it would be totally permissible. And again, he uses the same analogy that Shlomo Zalman Rabach does. It's like an amputation. Yes, each time you invite them, there's something wrong in the moment, but that wrong in the moment is dwarfed by what's good. Now, no one's guaranteeing anything. We don't know how the story is going to end. Not every story ends like an art scroll book. Not everything's a fairy tale. Maybe they're going to spend their whole life still being Michal Shabbos. Maybe they're going to think Judaism is terrible. Maybe. But it's very realistic that the sun is right, that even if they're not going to become fully religious, but at minimum it will make and contribute towards them being feeling warmer feelings. And Shlomo Seder of Sternbach, he thinks that would be permissible. Okay? So here we have two major, major poskim who take a very different view than Rav Moshe Feinstein. I want to add one more factor to consider, and then we're going to wrap it up with the final practical halacha. The last factor to consider is in source number 9. And that is, we have to consider that in addition to Lifnei Iver, which is really all we've been talking about until now, there could be a Chil Hashem problem. It's true that when we look at this one person, or even these 200 teenagers coming to the Shabbaton, each one, we look at the big picture, not just the Shabbos invite, but the broader point of can we help Makari of these people. But there's something even broader than this person on this Friday night or this person in his or her whole life. Right? And what we've been seeing recently against Rav Moshe Feinstein is that maybe we don't just look at this one Friday night invite, this one Pesach Seder, but look at this person over the next hopefully 5, 10, 15 years. Maybe we can inspire them. Okay, but once we're zooming out, maybe we have to zoom out even further, which is not about this one person, but what are we doing to Yiddishkeit in general? And a number of poskim, starting with source number 9, the Shevet Alevi, that's Rav Wozner from Lublin. We talked about him last week. My wife called me from Lublin, in Chachmei Lublin, because Rav Wozner was a student in Chachmei Lublin of Rav Meir Shapiro. Anyway, so he, this is years later when he's already living in Israel, he says, if you'll invite people to the shul, they're driving to the shul, that's a Chil Hashem. People are going to think the Torah Yiddishkeit allows driving. Or he says, even to my house, I'm in a frum neighborhood, I'm a frum, everyone knows I'm frum, and there's cars coming in and out of my house on a Friday night. That will look as if I'm saying it's mutter to drive. That itself could be a Chil Hashem. Now he wants to throw out the baby with the bathwater, Rav Wozner. He wants to say, therefore, all these things are usher. Maybe it's not Lifnei Iver, but it's a Chil Hashem. Rav Sternbach, in source number 10, I think is more subtle and more nimble. He says, you know something, you're right, Taka. It's a fair point. We have to be concerned with that. But the solution isn't, therefore, to say you can never have a Friday night Shabbaton in the shul. Yes! He says you have to close the parking lot. And a Hanami, to have a synagogue that allows people to park in the parking lot. Now, it happens to be when I was growing up in America, again, where it was not uncommon for people to drive to Orthodox shuls. Again, I don't know if it's common, but it's probably more common from what I know in the UK with United Synagogues, where still a lot of those shuls, which are Orthodox shuls, have non-Orthodox members. Again, I'm assuming just based on worldwide trends, sadly, that number is going down. Just because that whole phenomenon of people who are non-Orthodox but want to go to Orthodox shuls does not exist in numbers that it used to, which is not necessarily a good thing. But basically all those people, their children and grandchildren, two opposite things happened. Either they became Orthodox Bali Tshuva or they assimilated. This kind of in the middle has not really maintained over the last few decades. But be that as may, when I was a kid, it was very common in America, including my own shul, where people would come every Shabbos and drive. And the parking lot of the shul was closed. And not only that friend I told you of my parents earlier in this year, but many others would park around the corner. There was a bowling alley not far from the shul. They'd park there. There was one shul I knew about. I'm not sure if it still exists or not. There was one shul in America, not in where I grew up, but in a different city. There was one shul in America, an Orthodox shul, that was famous that they had the parking lot open. And I still remember when I was in Smicha and they was looking for a new rabbi, a lot of rabbis wouldn't even apply for the job. Or in the interviews, they said, I'm only taking the job if you close the parking lot. Now, why that particular shul kept the parking lot open and what the heter was, or if there's a heter, I don't know. But that was not the exception to the rule. More common is in shuls, institutionally, we close the parking lot. And Rav Sternbach suggests, even in the case of inviting the parents over, now this will be tricky, I think, on a personal level, you'd have to see if you can pull this off, but he recommends, can you ask them not to necessarily park in front of your house? And it's not a nice thing that it might be a Chil Hashem if they're driving in and out of your house on Shabbos. So if there could be a sensitivity to that, that might be something to keep in mind. But overall, it does seem like many poskim do accept this argument, that we look at the big picture. So how do we conclude? So let's conclude with source number, the last two or three sources, and I'll tell you as follows. And this will bring me back to the story I started with when I was doing NCSY. So one position on one extreme, Rav Moshe Feinstein and now the Shevet Alevi, Rav Wozner, they hold all these things are usher. You can be Makariv, Sunday through Friday, you can't do it on Shabbos. Or any other halacha that would be prohibited. You can't cut corners. You can't violate halacha to help save someone. I know you have good intentions. But they see no wiggle room. It's usher, period. Okay, that's one extreme view. Then the other extreme is Rav Sternbach. We don't usually have him as an extreme lenient posek, but in this case he is. Rav Sternbach says, since we view this not as a michshol, but as hatzalah, because you mean well, you're trying to be makar of them, want to bring them closer, even if it's a subtle way, just have warmer, more positive feelings to Yiddishkeit, let alone halavai, they wanted to become actually religious. But even if it's not that, it's not all or nothing. So Rav Sternbach holds, it's totally mutter. Okay, try to avoid the Chil Hashem thing. Don't make it in our face with the driving or the other things. But fundamentally, totally permissible. Invite them over for the Shabbaton, invite them. You know they're going to drive, it's okay. Because we don't look at it as, in the myopic small view, we look at it with the big picture. There is a third view, which I think is actually the more prevalent view. And when anyone has ever asked me, this is the psak that I gave them. And it's the psak that I actually eventually did receive from a Rosenzweig all those years ago when I asked him about the NCSY thing. And it really goes back to what eventually became a psak, which is known as Shlomo Zalman Auerbach on source number 11. We saw before in number 6 something else from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. This is a different tshuva. And when I was asking Rosenzweig the question all those years ago, what you see here in source number 11 was like a legend. It was a rumor. They used to say in the name of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that he supposedly said XYZ. And it was that XYZ, which is exactly what Rosenzweig told me in that meeting. But years later, they found that it wasn't just a rumor. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had written exactly this position as a letter to the rabbis at Or Sameach Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. If you know Or Sameach in Yerushalayim, it's a Baal Tshuva Yeshiva. It's a beginner's program, like Esha Torah, Or Sameach. And those rabbis said, now if you're in Or Sameach or Esha Torah, that's against ESY, of course this is a Shaila every single week of the year. So they had asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And for years it was kind of this rumor that he had a psak, but it turns out it was a letter that he had written to them. And eventually they published the letter in source number 11. Now if you recall, we saw previously in source number 6, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was the first one to have this chiddush about the big picture. Now he was talking about brachos. He invites him over to the house, to give him a piece of kichel, to give him a piece of cake, a coffee, but they're not going to make a bracha. Yeah, but if you embarrass them, if you insult them by not inviting them, by not offering them, they're going to be more... So in the case in source number 11, he's talking about Shabbos. Now Shabbos, as we all know, that's quite a bit more severe than just making a bracha. Not to poo-poo making brachos, but Shabbos is a whole other level. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, even though conceptually he agrees with what we already saw from Rav Sternbach, because that's what he himself says. Look at the big picture. But he has, when it comes to Shabbos, he adds one condition. Source number 11 says Rav Shlomo Zalman, look at where it's underlined, source number 11. Yes, you can invite them, even though they live far from the shul and they're going to drive to the Shabbaton Friday night, or they're going to drive to your or from your house. Then he adds, "Ulahatzia lo makom lina karov lamakom ba'ofen shlo yitzar klal l'chal Shabbos." What's his one condition? When you invite them for the Shabbaton to come to the Friday night dinner in the shul, when you invite them to come to Friday night, offer them the ability to sleep over. And he says, even if you know they're not going to accept it. Even if they don't accept it. But that's your responsibility. If they don't accept it, that's already on them. Now, not everyone really wants... Really? If I'm inviting Uncle Tom over for... Uncle Bob over for... it's one thing. 3 hours, I can handle with the guy. I have to sleep over Abbas? Yes, if you really care. Now, the good news is... I mean, good news, I put that in quotes. Bob's probably not going to say yes to your invitation. But it has to be that you gave them the opportunity. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe in all these outreach programs and stuff, at least certainly the ones who are doing it correctly, even when they have flyers and posters on Instagram and whatever for their Shabbatonim, they will make sure to write, you know, housing for all of Shabbat is available, you know, contact this number if you want housing over Shabbat, and blah, blah, blah. And that is based on this requirement. That has to be the offer. To just invite someone over without that opportunity. Now, again, it could be all, with the coworker, it'll be like, whoa, I don't want to come. Like, okay, you have to think about how you want to word it. And, you know, you would say, you know, I'd love to give you an opportunity. You know, the Sabbath or the Passover is a 25-hour experience. You want to see how we live. You know, again, they're going to say, that's okay. Dinner would be fine. And then you're Yotze. But that is what their opinion. And it turns out it wasn't just Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, source number 11, the Arsameach. It's also source number 12, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said the same thing. And I ended off this year. The last source you have is, again, that tshuva that I've been quoting from previously from Rav Asher Weiss, where it sounds like he might even be totally permissive but probably also recommends inviting to sleep over if you could, but just gives us encouragement. And I think this is an encouragement, but this is a good way to end. It says, Barar upashat linias daita. We're reading source number 13, but this we conclude. De kasher kol kavan aso, le karvan ba'avoso sa'ava. When all of our reason, our intention, the reason we're inviting these people over, helping, trying to help them, is because we want to bring them close through the bonds of love. Ulachnisam tachas kanfein shechina. Bring them close to see the beauty of Yiddishkeit. Nimsa chumra kulo. If we, all of a sudden we're going to be machmir, say, no, we can't do that because it's a violation of this, that, and the other. Really, we're being makel, as it were. We're being way too lenient on our responsibilities towards other Jews. Ubal nefesh roilo lahachmir about salsa pashos. Says Rav Asher Weiss, I think this is so beautiful. It's all perspective. Don't look at this as what Rabbi Gottlieb said, we can be lenient. We're allowed to invite people over. We technically give them a place to sleep or not. Says Rav Minchas Asher, Rav Asher Weiss, don't look at it that way. Say, I'm being machmir. I'm being machmir in Avas Yisrael. I'm a machmir in Kiruv Rechokim. Not a mekil. I'm a machmir. Right? The knee bone is connected to the hip bone, it's connected to the thigh bone. Everything's connected. You pull a little too hard on one side, of course it has to give on the other side. Halacha is a complex balance. So by being machmir on Avas Yisrael, by being machmir in Kiruv Rechokim, I have to be a little more mekil on Shabbos. That's true. Now, you need a posek to decide and let you know which one to be mekil on. Not everyone can make that decision for themselves. But this, what I consider the consensus view, is that you really have a right to be mekel. And again, you have people like Rav Sternbach, that's a pretty big person, who says you can invite them without even offering them the sleepover option. And if it's really too awkward for you, maybe you want to rely on that. But ideally, I think the consensus view, as we saw from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others, is you really should try. And certainly organizations who are inviting for Shabbatonim, that's easy. Absolutely sure. And you never know, it could be a handful of kids even take you up on it. But even if they don't, and even again, if you have a relative or a cousin or something, certainly with grandparents, if that's the case, that's easy. You know, they might be sleeping over anyway. Even if it's a coworker or something, you know, just offer them, hey, would you like to, we'd love you to have you as our guest over the Sabbath. You know, I don't drive, you know, I don't talk, but we'd love to have you over, see what it's like. No, that's too much. Okay, fine, then just come over Friday night. Okay, you can. I think that's the consensus, you should try for that. But if that's too awkward, you have what to rely on. But the main point to zoom out and just we conclude is, again, we've seen over these 2 weeks that we really do have responsibilities. And as I said last year, living in Ramat Beit Shemesh, you know, choices we all made, so we don't exactly run into these people every day on the street. But many of us still have relatives, or depending on our job, coworkers or other people, and we should look for opportunities to try to positively interact. God knows that the threads that are binding the Jewish people together are fraying every minute. So anything we can do, each of us on our own level, to help, I think it would really be a big mitzvah. Shkoach.